Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio's medicinal marijuana program was set to debut September 8th, 2 years after Governor Kasich signed the medical marijuana into law. The program likely will miss the mark by at least a few months. The Ohio Department of Commerce and two other state agencies are still working to get the program up and running, and we're going to talk about the process and the setbacks and the future today. Joining us is the Ohio Director of Commerce, Jacqueline Williams. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ann.
First of all, let's talk about the role of the Ohio Department of Commerce in all of this, because you're also working with the the medical board,
yes.
The state medical board, and the pharmacy board.
Right.
Okay.
The legislation that approved medical marijuana provided the responsibility for cultivation, growing, processing, and testing laboratories. Those are the responsibilities of the Department of Commerce. The pharmacy board is responsible for the dispensaries where people will actually go to purchase the product. And the medical board is responsible for the enrollment of physicians in the program who will recommend the product to patients. So generally, those are how the responsibilities were divided up in the bill.
And you can't do anything with dispensaries or doctors until you actually get product to put in the dispensaries.
Well,
and that takes growers and all kinds of other the testings and the growers. And
there have been a lot of processes that have been going on at the same time. And the medical board has clearly been registering physicians. I'm sure I don't have the final number, but at last count, it was over 200 physicians who were enlisted in the program to actually recommend it. Similarly, the pharmacy board has been involved in a very competitive process to identify those businesses that will operate dispensaries around the state. Mm-hmm. They've announced who has been awarded those dispensary licenses, and those businesses are in the process of setting up their businesses. Also, between the three agencies, we had to set up two IT systems. So there are many things that we work together collaboratively on, a lot of acquiring public input and information so that we could take the public issues into consideration. So this has been a very comprehensive, complex process, but all three of us have worked separately during the same time to get this program up and running.
Other states have started medical marijuana programs. Why couldn't Ohio just copy in other states? What was the difference?
Well, you know, we spent a lot of time very early on going to other states, talking with them, and finding out what they did, where the shortfalls were, what things they wish they had done differently. So we did a very, very exhaustive data collection effort with them. So I think that you'd have to look at each state's individual experience. What was the enacting legislation like? Every single state that's rolled out a medical marijuana program has had their own complications. And in the case of one state, they may have met a date, but they had one cultivator on the day that the program opened. So, you know, I think it depends on what your definition is in terms of whether or not you've actually met a deadline. But clearly, if you have one provider of product and you're shortly out of product, I'm not sure that you can say that the program is fully operational.
Some people have been frustrated. They think that the administration of Governor Kasich hasn't been behind this from the start. He didn't want the law passed. He begrudgingly signed the law and signed it into law because there was a competing opportunity on the ballot. And he hasn't been lauding the process as it goes along. In contrast, say, to the governor of Pennsylvania, who's been kind of keeping people updated and very supportive. Has that hindered you? I mean, what has the impact been of that or not?
Absolutely not. No impact at all. The governor signed the bill into law. We're part of the governor's administration, and we've been in regular and routine contact with people on his staff to apprise them and update them as this process moved forward. So it has had no impact whatsoever on our ability to get this process moving.
Wouldn't it have been nice, though, to have a governor as a cheerleader in the process?
The law is the law. And the law assigned certain responsibilities to us, and we're going to faithfully execute our responsibilities regardless. That's what we're here to do.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the state's medical marijuana law. The program was scheduled to go into effect September 8th. It's missed that deadline. My guest is Jacqueline Williams. She's director of the Ohio Department of Commerce, the agency that's responsible for the entire program, except for the dispensaries and certifying doctors to recommend marijuana as a treatment. If you have a question or comment this hour, you're welcome to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll start taking calls after the first break, so you might want to listen in the meantime. A big difference between Ohio and of course, correct me if I'm wrong, but a big difference between Ohio and a lot of other states is that three agencies were involved in the process. Was that something different?
It's hard for me to evaluate, you know, not really understanding maybe the structure in other states. Clearly, we've worked closely together to make sure that this is a seamless process because that's the way the law was established for us.
Why was IT an issue?
Well, we will need to have the ability to track every single plant that's produced from the very inception to the point where it's actually a completed product through the processing, through the testing laboratories, when it's actually a product on the shelf, when patients use it, as you would with any product that you may need. There may be a problem with it or there may be a recall. So there has been a need to do technology integration in order to be able to track every single product in the system. There have been some significant security requirements as well, because of the nature of the product that we're involved with. So those were some of the reasons behind the technology processes that we needed to develop.
And why was that difficult to do? What was the problem?
It hasn't been difficult
to do. It's just taken a lot of time.
Absolutely. Okay. You know, if you look at the entire process in the first year after the legislation was signed into law, the three agencies were involved in developing rules, crafting rules. So the law is the framework. Mm-hmm. The rules actually indicate how the program will operate. And that's a lengthy process. And part of the reason it's a lengthy process, it's important for the public to have input into the process. So it involved soliciting information, holding public hearings, hearing from people and how this might impact them. So that took a good part of the first year. And then after that point, each of us were engaged in competitive applications for those providers. So while I understand that the people who are anticipating using this product are disappointed that they can't purchase it today, in all cases, we've stood up all the individual components of this program by the September 8th date. So I think it depends upon what your definition is of what it's going to look like on day one.
But you know, most people expected, especially people who need the drug, expected that it would be available by September 8th.
I've certainly heard from some of those individuals, and I regret that, you know, that they're disappointed. But it was important to us. This is a highly regulated program, and it's important to us that we do this right. And we were not going to take shortcuts in order to get this operational by a particular date. It's more important that we have a safe product. People are going to be using this as medicine. They're going to be giving it to their children. And we would much rather have had a very, very stringent, effective process early on to preclude any problems in the future. So we've met every single deadline. And now we're in an environment where businesses are actually setting up their business. And rarely do things go exactly according to plan. There are issues that arise. And we're working with them through our inspection enforcement process to make sure that they are preserving and protecting the safety of the public and that they are developing their business in accordance with what they stated in their applications. And we will do that to in order to ensure the safety of the public.
There's something you and I talked about a month ago that I wanted to bring up, and it's kind of an overarching attitude that's been out there about medicinal marijuana, medical cannabis, and that's how it's referred to. It's been you told me, and I took it to heart, that you find it offensive when people refer to it as medical pot, that kind of a thing. Tell me about that and how you know why that's offensive and what you mean by that.
Well, I think that if you look at the landscape of medical marijuana, it's a very recent development in our country. So we have 31 states now that have legalized some form of medicinal marijuana. And one of the unique things about this industry is that while states have approved medicinal marijuana, it's still illegal on the federal level. So it's a very sensitive issue. I think the other complication is there have not been large clinical trials of this product and what the benefit will actually be once people use it. So we have a potential for a lot of things in this industry. But I think it's important as regulators, we've been entrusted with the responsibility to deliver this program to the public, that we always keep in mind that it is going to be used by people as medicine. And I think that gives us a different focus for how we deal with it and what priorities are important to us if we look at it as being a medicine as opposed to some other type of product. What we're regulating is not a recreational product. It's a medical product. And I think that we always have to be focused on that.
What is the goal at this point? What are you shooting for as far as getting it up and running so that those people can go to a dispensary and buy the medicines they need?
Well, we now have 5 cultivators, growers, who have received their operating license, and product is being grown in many of these facilities. Before the end of September, we expect to have a number of other inspections. If all of those cultivators pass their inspection and receive their operating license, then we'll have about half of the 26 cultivators actually operating and producing product. So, you know, it's difficult to predict a date, and I try to avoid doing that. But we also have processors who are setting up their businesses. We have testing labs that have been approved and are setting up their businesses. And we think that in a matter of a few months that we will actually have product on shelves and people will be able to buy those products. If those 13 cultivators are actually approved by the end of the month, that will be about 171,000 square feet of growing space. And that's a significant amount of product. Earlier, you mentioned Pennsylvania. I think when Pennsylvania started their program, they were the state that had one cultivator that was providing product. And in a very, very short period of time, they were out of product. So we certainly don't want to have that issue here. We're working very hard to get this up and running. But the other thing is, we're transitioning into what does this program look like operationally going forward so that we can make the proper decisions in order to make sure that it serves the public.
And just one more question before we take a break. The Ohio Department of Commerce has a few other jobs that it does,
we do.
A few other responsibilities. Can you give us a thumbnail of what the Department of Commerce does?
Sure. We are a significant regulatory entity. We regulate about 28 industries in Ohio, including the liquor industry, banking, credit unions, payday lenders, the securities industry, cable TV industry. We have the state fire marshal's office under our umbrella, unclaimed funds. So we have a lot of responsibilities, and you know, we take all of those responsibilities very seriously. But one unique thing about this industry is establishing an industry from the ground level is different than working with mature industries, which tends to be the rest of our work within commerce. So it's different. It's very interesting, but it's important that we take information from the other work that we do to make sure that we do it properly.
My guest is Jacqueline Williams. She's director of the Ohio Department of Commerce, which is pretty much the lead agency in breaking ground on Ohio's medical marijuana industry. The pharmacy board manages the issue of dispensaries where you'll buy it. The medical board manages the issue of certifying doctors who will recommend it. But Department of Commerce is doing pretty much everything else. So if you have a question or comment about what the Department of Commerce is doing in regard to medical marijuana, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about medical marijuana in Ohio. Ohio's medical marijuana program, to most of us, was supposed to debut last week. Now the opening day could be months away. The Ohio Department of Commerce and two other state agencies, the Pharmacy Board and the Medical Board, are still at work to get the program up and running in coming months. The state needs to license cultivators and certify others to process, test, and sell the drugs. Still with us is the director of the Ohio Department of Commerce, Jacqueline Williams, and joining us is senior policy advisor for the Ohio Department of Commerce on this, Mark Hamlin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We keep hearing that maybe the parameters for who can buy marijuana will change over time and that that could have a big impact on the demand. Mark Hamlin, is that something that's strictly the pharmacy board or the medical board or the legislature that determines that?
I think that decision is driven partly by the legislature. And one of the things the director mentioned, both on the legislative side and on the agency side, I think we took a look at what worked and didn't work in other states. And part of, I think, who can buy is really driven by the conditions that are allowable under Ohio law. So there's a list of 21 conditions that were actually laid out in the statute when the legislature passed the bill. And again, I think some of the states that have had challenges standing up their industry had challenges because they had a really narrow list of qualifying conditions. And what you would see is the companies producing and selling the medical marijuana had an oversupply because there just weren't the patients that could qualify. I think the feeling was the 21 conditions that the legislature started with are a good foundation on which to build. We expect to have good patient demand. But there is a process for the state medical board, actually, and they're working right now to set up a panel of experts that can look at any emerging research or any issues that are identified by stakeholders about additional conditions that would allow, that would really drive additional people to be able to purchase.
And then they would make recommendations to lawmakers at that point, or could it be a rule change?
The authority is actually with the medical board directly to make those decisions.
Okay. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Again, we're talking about medical marijuana. Questions or comments, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Stephen in Newark, you're on the air. Hi, Stephen.
Good morning, Ann. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
If my question is either for Director Williams or Mr. Hamlin, and I appreciate your show very much. And recently read an article on the weekend that came out in the Cleveland Plain Dealer with regards to some questions on the delay process and the implementation of the system. And my question pertains to the growers in particular. In this article, they mentioned one of the growers in Cleveland called Parma Wellness as an example that hasn't been up and operational based on their conditional license. And I wonder if the state can consider an alternate applicant if the applicant's not complied with their submission, or in order to try and get growth facilities up as a part of the system.
Mark Hamlin?
Sure, I can take that. Under the law, under the rules that were created around the program, each of the different license types has a certain amount of time. Once they go through the competitive application process and are awarded their license, In the case of growers, they had 9 months from the date they were awarded their provisional license to basically tell the department, we're ready to operate, come and do our inspection and give us our certificate of operation. That's a fairly aggressive time frame. We thought it was appropriate to really try to push people to get up and operating. But we recognize that especially in Ohio with construction seasons and the winters that we have, there are different businesses that may run into challenges with weather, with their contractors, with local permitting, whatever it
may
be. They're
all indoor facilities, by the way, but you're talking about the actual construction of them.
That's right. Yeah. And so there was a mechanism allowed for if when you get to the end of that 9 months, something has come up and you have a justifiable reason to request an extension to the 9 months. We took those extension requests from some of the operators, looked at their justifications, and tried to make appropriate decisions of balancing those normal business challenges that people have standing up their businesses with also wanting to make sure that we're getting product available for people. So as long as the businesses were able to demonstrate that they were moving aggressively towards getting their business up and operating and they were facing delays that were beyond their control, we generally would allow them some additional time.
If a business couldn't justify it, hypothetically, I mean, are there alternates out there?
Well, the director has the authority to deny their request, and that would have to go through an appeals process because they do have rights under the law. But ultimately, we had, I think the director referred to, a pretty competitive and robust application process. On the growing side, we had 185 applicants applying for a much smaller number of licenses. So I think there is demand out there were we to go back for another application process. But at this point, you know, we're working with the growers who are in front of us.
Okay. Stephen, thanks for that question. Appreciate it. What have you learned about what have you taken from your other regulatory roles and applied to medical marijuana, Jacqueline Williams? What made sense? Was liquor control, would that be a good parallel or what?
It's different from the standpoint that liquor is part of a three-tiered control system, and obviously it's federally it is legal, so it doesn't provide some of the same complications that medical marijuana does. I think what we've learned from our other businesses is that we have to establish a very solid foundation in order not to encounter issues or problems later on. And that's especially the case when people are actually putting this product in their bodies. So what we've learned is that we need to have a very strong framework. We need to have strong compliance and enforcement. And to Mark's point about the process being competitive, we have to hold the cultivators and the processors and the testing labs to very high standards and the standards that they laid out in their own application process, because there were other qualified applicants who did not secure a license. And it's important that we make sure that they're building their facility and operating their business in accordance with what they committed to do. Because we think if we're stronger at the early stages of the program, that we'll have less problems with compliance and enforcement later on. And that's very important.
Why can't you get medicinal marijuana products from other states where they're already producing it?
Because of the federal issue of interstate transport.
Then what about that situation of how do they get the seeds in the first place then? How did you overcome that?
Well, let's be serious. It's a very strange environment where it's federally illegal and it's legal by state. So our purview, our jurisdiction begins when we monitor the activities in the actual facilities.
Okay.
And that's what we're responsible for.
Justin in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Justin.
Hi. Good morning. My question is really about the taxes on the medicinal marijuana.
Justin, could I ask you to pull your mouth away from your phone just a little bit?
Oh, sure. Is that better?
A lot better.
Okay. Yeah, so my question was basically about the taxes on the medical marijuana. Essentially, how much is the tax going to be, and how much do we stand to gain financially as a state from the taxes?
Okay. Mark Hamlin?
So There was not a separate tax structure created for the medical marijuana program, so they are taxed like other businesses. They'd be subject to, depending on their operating structure, the commercial activities tax or the sales tax. I've not seen estimates. I think there's a lot of the robustness of this industry. We've done some estimates based on experience of other states. But we're really going to have to wait and see once the program and the industry becomes operational to see what kind of revenue it's going to bring in.
Are prescriptions taxed in Ohio?
Prescriptions, over-the-counter prescriptions, I believe, are subject to taxation.
And this
I think
is
it's
considered
anything that's
an over-the-counter?
That would be right.
Okay, so
it's
like—
It's not a prescription, right.
Right, so this would be like NyQuil. Or that's a bad example.
It's regulated differently than over-the-counter medications, but from a taxation perspective, I think the tax structure, the exemption is specifically for prescriptions, and this doesn't fall under that category as I understand it.
And so Jacqueline Williams or Mark Hamlin, are you confident that you're going to generate the revenue you need to support the regulatory arm of this?
Well, that's certainly our expectation. There were application fees that those people who are applying for licenses paid. There also are ongoing licensing fees, as with all of our other businesses, that you pay. And certainly our hope and expectation is that the cost of the program, the regulation of the program, will be covered by revenues that are generated.
Justin, thanks for that call. We appreciate it. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. If you have a question or comment, what about the fairness of the selection process when it came to the cultivators, the growers? There's been questions about whether or not minorities are getting a fair shake in this, whether people who maybe have been involved in the business before and know what they're doing don't get a fair shake because they don't have the money for those entry fees.
The legislature actually included language in the bill to allow for awards to economically disadvantaged companies. And in the process of selecting applicants, there were companies that were economically disadvantaged, minority-owned companies, that did receive provisional licenses. Now, that issue is being challenged in court, and we will have to await the outcome of that court decision. Some other individuals have gone to challenge the awarding of licenses to economically disadvantaged companies. So that is currently awaiting court action, and we'll just have to wait and see what transpires there. One thing that we did uniquely in Ohio is that we established a small cultivator because we wanted to ensure that this was an economic development opportunity for some companies that may not have the capital of a large grower, but it would be an opportunity for some of those smaller companies to get into the business. And that's why we created the small cultivator. We also have large cultivators. Anytime you have a process that's competitive, particularly in an emerging industry that people have significant expectations pinned on. And as we've seen in other states where there has been significant revenues developed from industries related to marijuana, it's very competitive. And there are going to be people who are not successful in securing a license who will be unhappy with that. I guess the bottom line is that we are happy with the process. Were there mistakes that we made? Could we have done things differently? Absolutely. And, we're a learning organization, so we continue to learn from things and make sure that future efforts will incorporate those learnings. But it was a fair, comprehensive, thorough process, and we stand behind the selections that were made in that application process.
And as far as the licenses go, is there the expectation or the flexibility in the program going forward to expand the number?
Absolutely, yes. And I think, the framework we had from the legislature was a very good one, and it provided a lot of flexibility for us to make determinations going forward on when we open up new application processes and how many applications we accept, how many new growers. And I think we are going to have to base that on what the market demand actually is. And that's a challenge, to try to look at the data that's emerging from the industry and to make business decisions based on that data. But that's what we're committed to doing.
Lisa in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. I was just wondering, you know, if the medical marijuana is to be used really just like a medical prescription drug, how this process differs from bringing other drugs to market in a state that are new, because it seems like this is an awful lot of work that I have never heard of, you know, pain medicines or other kinds of medicines. Maybe it just hasn't had the press. But is there a different process?
Well, I think the difference is that it's still a Schedule I drug by the federal government. Normally, the DEA will conduct extensive clinical trials of medications long before they're actually approved for people to be able to use them. But because of the fact that there has been very, very little in the way of scientific testing that's occurred with medical marijuana, and because it is a Schedule I federal drug, it has not gone through the same process that a normal drug or medication would prior to coming to market.
Lisa, thanks for that call. Appreciate it. Anybody else? Questions or comments? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests are Jacqueline Williams. She's director of the Ohio Department of Commerce, and Mark Hamlin. He's senior policy advisor for the Ohio Department of Commerce. And we're talking about medical marijuana. A lot of people thought that the program would roll out on September 8th, and it's ready to roll as soon as they get the cultivators and the processors and the dispensaries up and running. If you have a question or comment, once again, 614-292-8513. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about medical marijuana in Ohio. The program was set to debut September 8th. At least for most of us, we thought it was coming up September 8th. And a lot of the rules and regulations are in place, but the opening day could be months away. The Ohio Department of Commerce and two other agencies are still at work to get the program up and running in coming months. The state needs to license more cultivators and certify others to process and yet others to sell the drugs. Still with us is Director of the Ohio Department of Commerce, Jacqueline Williams, Senior Policy Advisor for the Ohio Department of Commerce, Mark Hamlin. And, you know, we were talking off air, and I think we just want to reiterate one more time that the big issue here, the overarching issue for any state, is the fact that this is not legal at the federal level. So when you even when you talk about the studies that haven't been done and how you figure out trying to figure out dosages and that kind of a thing, because the studies haven't been done, figuring out the dosages is complicated and fraught. And you can't do the studies because you can't do reliable studies if they're not done on a national level. You can't do them on a national level because it's still a Schedule I.
That's absolutely right. And so it's a very interesting dynamic at work. Even things that you don't consider, like banking issues, and because Commerce also regulates banks, willingness to participate in this industry because of the federal prohibitions against the marijuana industry. So there are some very interesting dynamics at work that don't occur with other industries, and that makes it for a very, very challenging kind of environment to work around that. I think what I will say is that the medical marijuana industry, there is enormous potential that people believe about this industry and about the therapeutic effects that marijuana could have. But much of that is unknown at this point because there haven't been large-scale clinical trials. So we don't know. And right now, it's simply a potential, but not something that we have concrete information about.
Is there any particular state that you felt like worked hard and got it right, or at least over time got it right, that you turn to and go to sometimes when you say, well, how did you do that?
I think that, you know, many states have gotten parts of it, you know, have done it pretty well. You know, we did meet with Illinois and Colorado and other states early on. I think each state has had their challenge. And there are things that we would emulate and other things that we would not want to. And we tried to benefit from that by having a conversation with them early on. But I think the bottom line is this is a very, very new industry. And nobody has enough experience or enough years under their belt with this industry to really get any specific information that would be helpful going forward.
They're as a legal entity.
That's exactly right. We're all treading the same water. So yeah. We try to stay in touch with them and learn what we can from them. But we're all in this together.
Growing cannabis, as you mentioned, we've talked about, it's also a science. And what about scientific innovation? As the clinical trials do begin to take shape, Mark Hamlin, is that again going to be a pharmacy board or a medical board proclivity? I mean, is it going to be up to them?
I think you'll see it really across the industry. And I think we have 30 states now who are operating some form of a legal cannabis program in their states. And so I think if you look sort of across the states, but then also, you know, vertically within Ohio, I think you'll see more and more as the industry becomes more normalized within the state, you'll see more and more people willing to participate. I think we'll develop our own body of knowledge. The doctors who are signed up to recommend will collect information because they have relationships with their patients. They'll find out what conditions they're using the medical marijuana for, whether it's working, what's working for different types of conditions and different kinds of patients. So I think that it will develop, and I think there's momentum behind the industry both at the state and national levels, but I think it's behind the curve a little bit in terms of what we have versus what would normally you would see available for a new drug that's coming down the pipe.
Hmm. Are there enough doctors that have signed up and been certified to recommend marijuana, medicinal marijuana for treatment?
So right now the medical board has certified 222 doctors, and they actually will certify some more tomorrow at their next board meeting. So initially when the estimates were being developed for the program, they were expecting and hoping for about 250 doctors, and we're going to exceed that. So that is good news. I think you'll see once the industry actually stands up and patients are able to go to dispensaries, able to go into their doctors and say, hey, we need access to this, I think you'll see the numbers just continue to grow from there. But I think that we feel like there's a good foundation on which to build in terms of the doctors that have been approved already.
And then what about dispensaries? Are there enough? I mean, what if you don't have a car? What if there's not good transportation? Are people going to have fair access to dispensaries?
I can't speak about the specifics, but I do know that there is a robust number of dispensaries that the pharmacy board has approved. And I know they took great care to ensure that they were geographically dispersed throughout the state, just to address the issue that you refer to about the access. So it looks like there's a very robust effort to ensure that these dispensaries are located within reasonable travel distance from all people in Ohio.
And I think to the point that the director made earlier, the rules provide flexibility for the different elements of the program after it becomes operational to really pay attention to what's happening out mm-hmm. in the market. And I think the two things that you'll really see happen really intently over the next year are the Department of Commerce, Pharmacy Board, Medical Board, really paying attention to the demand and what the dynamics are, and do we have enough licensees in the mm-hmm. different space. And then I think there will also be a number of policy issues just as people learn about this new industry that's coming, locating in their communities, you know, things around, you know, how to workplace issues involve the medical marijuana industry? How do we make sure that we treat this as medicine and lock up our medicines in our homes? So there are issues like that that I think are not necessarily regulatory in terms of the different license types that, that the department issues and that pharmacy board and medical board issue. But I think that those are issues that will also bubble up a little bit as people start to see these new industries in their communities.
Is it are you when it comes to regulating something like this, is it better that it started with medical versus recreational and medical at the same time? Do you see, because in a lot of states now, they're also legalizing it recreationally. Michigan, I think it's going to be on the ballot, and it's apparently going to be a slam dunk in Michigan for recreational. After many years, one of the first states to legalize medical marijuana, and they've changed their program a lot over the years, too.
I think it remains to be seen. The voters of Ohio at least voted it down once. Mm-hmm. If they had approved the ballot initiative, we would have been the first state in the country to go from illegal to fully legal overnight. So most states have gone medical marijuana first. Even those handful of states that have decided to approve recreational marijuana have all started with medical marijuana. So I think there's a lot we don't know. There's a lot we have to learn. And, you know, we're taking the responsibility we've given very seriously, and hopefully we will learn things in the future. But it's hard to predict what will happen. But I think there are a lot of issues that we need to address. And I think having a medical marijuana program is much more manageable because of the unknowns.
Even if it was legalized recreationally in Ohio, would the medical marijuana program still stand on its own?
In states that have approved recreational marijuana, they continue to have medical marijuana programs.
Okay.
And to give medical marijuana cards to those individuals who have medical conditions that a doctor has determined and recommended medical marijuana for. So those states that have added recreational marijuana have retained their medical marijuana program. Now, they may be going to the same dispensaries or facilities to purchase those products, but they still are looked at as a separate program.
Okay. Rob in Canton, you're on the air. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Ann. My question is for the director. Like any cop will tell you, we can't be everywhere all the time. Who is going to make sure that the growers don't start selling product out the back door without the knowledge of the Department of Commerce?
Well, that certainly falls within our responsibility. And, you know, we will be involved with compliance with those cultivators and enforcement activities against those people who violate the terms and conditions of their ability to have those facilities. So we will do our very best to make sure that we're ensuring the law is enforced the way it was indicated.
Yeah, go on, Mark Hamlin.
And I think it's important to understand, too, security has been a major element of standing up the licensing around this program. It was one of the major criteria in awarding licenses to the applicants across all license types. We have 24-hour-a-day surveillance systems built within the facilities, so we have the ability to check in and make sure that product isn't being diverted, that only authorized employees are working within the facilities. And the inventory tracking system that the director mentioned earlier is really we call it a seed-to-sale system because it functions exactly that way. When a plant gets registered into the system, we know exactly what happens with it at every step of its life cycle to make sure that it's not being diverted to other uses. So the security piece, especially with this new industry, has really been prioritized both in terms of choosing who's going to be able to operate in the industry and also the enforcement compliance piece ongoing from a regulatory perspective.
I get you can follow a plant, you can tag them, there's a lot of things you can do, but how can you stop somebody from snapping a bud off of a plant?
They have to weigh the plants.
Okay.
There's an expectation of at every stage of the life cycle, we see how much plant is available, and if those numbers deviate from what we would expect to see, that creates a trigger in the system that we would go in and look at. And again, because we have the ability with the surveillance system, if there's something that just looks funny to us, we have the ability to go back and randomly check or target a specific date where we think something might be needed to check out.
And if a grower or a cultivator violates this, they lose their license.
The director has a range of enforcement authorities, but up to and including taking their license, yeah.
Okay. Rob, thanks for that question. Janet in Pataskala, you're on the air. Hi, Janet.
Hi. I have a comment. I have read.
Could I, Janet, could I ask you to, I hate to interrupt you. Could you pull the phone away from your mouth?
I apologize, yes.
Okay.
I have read that in the states where they have recreational marijuana legally, the growers have been putting rat poison around their farms because rats love marijuana. The result has been that very many wonderful wild animals have been eating the dead rats and dying in hundreds.
These are these are outside growers, though, right?
These are outside growers. Okay. I want to know if we're going to be legalizing these growers to be inside a building or outside, and how they will prevent them from using rat poison that is really disseminating our wildlife.
Okay.
These cultivators will be growing all products indoors.
The small and the large cultivators.
The small and the large. They are all indoor, inside of buildings. And there is a very robust testing protocol that will occur during the life cycle of these products for us to ensure that there are, you know, the product is safe for people and others to ingest. So that's part of the testing protocol to ensure that there isn't mold or any other kinds of naturally occurring processes that's taking place with regard to these plants before people are ingesting them.
Okay. Janet, thank you so much. James in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, James.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I was happy to hear you being admonished for using the term medicinal pot, because that has always bugged me. But I was very surprised to hear that there was no concrete evidence that marijuana helped medicinally. That might have been a bit of an overreach. So anyway, I would like to hear what the 21 qualifying conditions are to use marijuana medicinally in this state, and how the product is intended to help those conditions. Thanks.
I don't know if we can get to all 21 conditions, James. I'm sure they're public. In fact, Jacqueline Williams, where can people go to find out these kinds of answers to those kinds of questions?
They can go to the websites that are offered by all three of the organizations to take a look at the information that's provided there.
To the medical board, the pharmacy board, and the Department of Commerce.
Correct. And I think there was a time when we would also collect information or questions or comments from people. I'm not sure if that capability still exists, but certainly a person can attend an advisory committee meeting if they'd like. Those are held periodically, almost monthly, here in Columbus with the Medical Marijuana Advisory Committee. So I would read everything that's available to make sure that you understand specifics. In Ohio, we had probably the most comprehensive list of qualifying conditions of any state. That's one of the things that our legislature took away from doing their research on other programs. So it's a pretty complete list of medical conditions.
And what is the state basing any of the formularies on anything? I mean, is it just from what other states have experienced, whatever anecdotal evidence is out there?
I think they researched what other states had done, and they I don't know the research process that they undertook, but you know, when Ohio's bill was passed, there were compliments around the country about how thorough and comprehensive the list was. It seemed to cover a lot of matters. And you contrast that with Illinois, which had limited conditions and then found themselves in a place of needing to add qualifying conditions. So I think we have a very good basic framework to operate off of.
James, thanks for that question. Jacqueline Williams, I want to thank you for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jacqueline Williams, she's the director of the Ohio Department of Commerce. It's in charge of regulating medical marijuana when it rolls out in Ohio in the coming months. And also Mark Hamlin, thanks to you as well.
Thanks, Ann.
Mark Hamlin, he's senior policy advisor for the Ohio Department of Commerce on this topic. Thanks for all your great questions. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.